Monster Man, Episode 337, Ice Wolf and Kopru.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we'll be continuing our journey through the Monsters chapter of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Our first monster for today is the Ice Wolf. The Ice Wolf will seem pretty familiar to you because it is a pony-sized wolf with white fur that can breathe out a cloud of frost. It's basically a winter wolf from AD&D. I don't know why it's called an ice wolf and not a winter wolf, but whatever. I feel like the name winter wolf is a little better. Maybe it's just the alliteration, but I don't think it really makes a big difference. They take less damage from cold. They take a little bit more damage from fire, but only a little bit. You add +1 to every die of fire damage that you do to an ice wolf, which is, you know, not nothing. I've said before that I'm not an enormous fan of the winter monster with cold powers, and I don't want to be too dogmatic about this. It's just that there are quite a lot of them. So there's the winter wolf, there's the hoar fox, which is like a winter wolf except it's a fox. I think the Yeti has cold powers as well, and it ultimately just doesn't feel very original after the first one. But if you need, you know, a cold powers monster for your journey through a snowy landscape, then ice wolves or winter wolves, depending on your context, are perfectly fine. Part of that is that we already have this association between wolves and winter in a way that makes them work especially well. The existence of a thematic connection makes us believe that the spirits of winter might very well appear in the form of wolves. They don't seem wrong or out of place, regardless of how much sense they make or how many times you've previously encountered them. From a cold-loving monster, we move on to a heat-loving monster with the Kopru, or the Kopru. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it. These are aquatic creatures who thrive in warm conditions. From the waist up, they have like a humanoid body, and from the waist down, they have a tail that divides into kind of three end bits. Flukes, fins, whatever, each of which has a claw, so they can grapple you with their tail and then attack you, or more likely, they can charm you because the Kopru can hypnotize people. And their charm attack is very effective. It's much more effective than a typical charm. And in essence, what it does is subvert character. So it's not obvious that you've been charmed. You become resistant to other forms of mental domination and essentially turns you into a traitor within the party. So there could be people working for the Kopru and nobody has any idea. The Kopru are monsters from X1, Isle of Dread, which is also the same place that we saw, for example, the Arania in this chapter, and a couple of other monsters that are in both this chapter and the book as a whole. They are the sort of like main villains, if villains is the right word, the main threat of the Taboo Island section. And that little part of the Isle of Dread setting is the ruins of a once great Kopru city, which is now inhabited by a small number of them who live in the flooded lower levels. They remind me in that sense a little bit of the Hutakan, where they live in like an isolated area. They don't have the thing where the Hutakan like don't know about events in the outside world, but they're kind of remote and sealed off because, you know, part of the taboo is that you're not supposed to go into the ruined city, and another part of it is you're not supposed to tell anybody about the story behind it. And like a number of former monstrous dominators, they were overthrown by their human subjects, and now only this handful of survivors continue to live on in the ruins of their old city. This is a pretty common trope, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I think that the reason that the Kopru have never really achieved the same kind of success as some of the other monsters that we see in this book, you know, not too many of the monsters from Isle of Dread have become generalized, even though my understanding is that the scenario is comparatively well regarded. But like the Kopru, the Arania, those monkey guys whose names I can't remember, none of them really caught on outside Isle of Dread. I wonder why that is. Like, there's nothing wrong with them, they're fine. The Kopru are an interesting monster because one of the things that they do is transform a situation in terms of how dangerous it is. So you might think that things are going really well in your exploration of the flooded lower levels of the ruined city, but that is because you don't know that the Kopru have nabbed a straggler from your party and turned them against you. So an expedition or a fight that might seem to have been going your way can be radically transformed when one of the party turns traitor and, you know, runs away with the torch, and now you're in the dark, flooded under chambers, and the Khopru are circling all around you. I think that's fine. It's definitely got some kind of atmospheric quality to it. As a player, I would probably find it a little bit frustrating, mainly because I think there's a debate to be had about the concept of playing fair with magical powers, because I like having magic be an open-ended thing in games. I like magic representing the possibility that anything can happen. But at the same time, you have characters who are wizards who are otherwise supposed to be knowledgeable about magic are making their assumptions about, you know, who's on their side and who's been turned based on how they know charm works. I don't know. The Khopru charm ability seems to have a little feeling of like, oh no, but this is a special charm power to it. And I'm not normally a huge fan of that, but it is sort of their main gimmick. And insofar as you learn anything about them, you definitely learn that they kind of kept people controlled and dominated. And so, you know, this could very well be something that you remained prepared for. Now, one thing that I've seen written about the Khopru is that this is a bit like what the Aboleth already does. I don't know if there are Aboleths in this game. There aren't in this book. But I have never been as attached to Aboleths as a lot of people seem to be. Aboleths seem to be one of those monsters that is comparatively popular, but I've never really been an enormous fan of them. I think it's the being big fish thing. I think it seems to me that it makes them more difficult to interact with, even though they are these intelligent beings. I don't know. I don't know if I have a good explanation for why I'm not a huge fan of the Aboleth. They're fine, I suppose. But so the criticism that these kind of take on the Aboleth role seems like something that's not going to come up in play, right? You're going to encounter these guys on your first expert level adventure, almost certainly, because it's in the adventure that comes in the expert box set, long before even if this game has Aboleths, you'd be encountering them. So I'm not too concerned about that aspect. I do agree that the Aboleth kind of is the more successful implementation of this concept. It's got some kind of elements of the aquatic mind flayer, the conspiracy boss, the underground lurker. Maybe they're just not distinctive enough to have really established their own space on the pavement. You know, for all that I came in a little critical of them, I think they're fine. I can definitely see using them. I think maybe the problem is that because so many people have played Isle of Dread, and Isle of Dread is like, yes, this is the last remnant of the Khopru, you know, rule over this area. Once you've done the revelation of them, then you probably don't feel like having them again. As soon as you know you're in the ruined city of the Khopru, you got your eyes peeled for Khopru lurking around, I would assume. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. Now, I mentioned before some of my thoughts about ice monsters, and that actually is going to come up in our next episode, which is a special episode about the Frozen North. Monsters of the tundra, monsters of the winter. And then, at the end of this week, I'm bringing out a special episode that is all about the Tengu, a creature from Japanese folklore. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.